Hungry? Good. You know, I don't think we do food enough on Histrionix. In fact, I don't think we've ever done it before, but that all changes today when we look back at a period of white Australia and its relationship with food that I suppose we can declare in its way to be ultimately Australian, even though its beginnings were anything other than that. I am talking about the dim sim. Oh, yeah. Don't tell me you haven't loved one in the past. The odd dimmy. Well, it has a hell of a story to tell. How did this humble food come to be? What does it tell us about the history of Chinese immigrants in Australia? Well, I am just stunned, frankly, to be able to introduce to you our expert this week. Her name is Dr. Barbara Nickel. She happens to be an expert specifically on Chinese restaurants during white Australia. I know. What an incredible field of research, Barbara. Thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure, Walid.
What got you into this as a research interest?
I have a number of Chinese friends, Chinese-Australian friends, but also friends from Taiwan and East Asia. And we were just sitting chatting to some Taiwanese friends over lunch in a Chinese restaurant, as you do. And one of them said, you know, this must be one of the earliest Chinese restaurants in Melbourne. And so I thought, right, this sounds like a really good research project. And it went from there and it was absolutely amazing.
But it seems that actually Chinese restaurants have been around a lot longer than we tend to think.
Oh, yes. There is a tendency to regard them as a sort of 1950s onward product. But in fact, well, we've had Chinese restaurants in Melbourne since 1860s, I think.
What? 1860s?
Oh, yes.
Wow. So what is this? Is this Gold Rush? Is that what we're talking about?
Well,
is that what drove this?
I mean, yes, that drove it, obviously, because we had people coming from all over the world, and Chinatown or Little Bourke Street was certainly on the move around that time. And, of course, we needed restaurants to feed hungry miners and feed hungry businessmen, but there were also a number of non-Chinese Australians finding their way into Little Bourke Street. Around the turn of the century, there were certainly a number of non-Chinese Australians eating in Chinese restaurants, far more than history gives, you know, suggests and gives credit to.
Well, and this turn of the century moment is actually a very interesting moment because, of course, that's Federation. And I think it's actually the very first act that the newly federated Australian Parliament passes
is
the Immigration Restriction Act, which is designed to restrict Chinese immigration to Australia. And so you have this tension between a Chinese community that has been there for a long time and is establishing these restaurants and feeding people outside the borders of their own community, and then a broader society that's not always welcoming of them. Was the restaurant an important aspect of social inclusion or social interaction for the Chinese community?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And they catered for the small Chinese community at that stage. And the menus indicate that the dishes were pretty close to authentic, although, of course, no transported food culture can claim to be totally authentic.
Of course not.
But they also always catered for the sort of rather more pedestrian tastes, I think, of the non-Chinese community. There were always people finding their way into those restaurants. And the Chinese are fairly entrepreneurial businessmen, and they knew, they could see that their food was attractive to us. At that stage, a small number of non-Chinese, but it was growing. And certainly by the 1920s, there were significant numbers of non-Chinese finding their way there. And the big change, I think, came over the war years.
And then eventually, as far as the menu is concerned, we came up with the desperately inauthentic product called the dim sim, which, of course, not until I got quite a bit older than when I was a kid first devouring those things that I realised doesn't seem to exist outside of Australia. So what was the antecedent? What did the dim sim evolve from?
Well, the dim sim, it was part of the culture of the dim sum, taking very tasty, very delicate items with tea.
Dumplings, things like
yes,
that?
Yes, one of the dishes in particular was the steamed minced pork dumpling with water chestnuts, and that, of course, became the predecessor of the Australianised dim sim.
But, of course, because it was Australianised, we had to make it big, right?
Yes.
I mean, you're talking about delicate little things that you snap up with your chopsticks.
They were.
How far removed would you say the end product was in Australia from the original dim sum that it was based on?
Quite a distance. This was all post-war, of course. The first mass-produced dim sims were by the Wing Yang and Company. They recognised that Chinese restaurants were selling them to non-Chinese customers over the counter, dim sims and little spring rolls. So I think they were probably still fairly small, but certainly could be taken, eaten on the run. By the war years, they were being sold by Chinese men in little caravans at sporting ovals. They even sold them outside Essendon Airport.
Wow,
where people went plane swapping.
Competing with the meat pie.
Yes, absolutely. And the other amazing thing I think about the dim sim is that when they were sold in large numbers to fish and chip shops, you're getting this interesting cultural mix, and people who would probably not have normally gone to a Chinese restaurant were going into fish and chip shops and buying, well, I suppose, a version, a Australianised version of
yes.
Chinese food.
So it was Chinese food that's not quite Chinese food sold in a fish and chip shop, which is definitely not a Chinese shop. But this extraordinary, I suppose, cosmopolitanisation of society, perhaps even unintentionally. But were there social flow-on effects? Did this lead, for example, to a greater understanding or greater acceptance of the Chinese community in Australia?
Yes, I believe it did. You could also add to that chow mein, chop sueys, things like that. But certainly the portability of the dim sim, I think, and its spread through non-Chinese food outlets is an interesting one. And it became extremely popular over the war years.
In what way? How do you explain this phenomenon in white Australia? I mean, was there any secrecy surrounding the presence of the Chinese community here? Were they in any way trying to do this for commercial gain, but trying to hide from public view because of a society that may have been hostile to them? Or was this a way of them being sort of out and proud?
Yes, that's an interesting question. I think that the Chinese business community, they were operating under the white Australia policy. Mm. It was affecting their businesses, But they, in many ways, my research suggests they sort of just got on with it. They were interested in their businesses, in growing their businesses. And certainly from 1934, when changes to the policy allowed them to bring in what we would call temporary workers today, they brought family in, often under the guise of being a cook.
Yes.
But they brought family in, and that enabled them to often to expand their businesses. And certainly from then on, and certainly over the war years, Chinese restaurants expanded quite significantly. And I think the dim sim, for instance, was one way of bringing together cultures.
They say that the way to a man's heart is through his stomach, I suppose.
Well, that's true.
It's true of nations and societies as well.
Absolutely,
And money. It's amazing what money can do and the quest for it, way it can bring people together and divide them, of course.
Well, I think too, it would be disingenuous to suggest that racialised attitudes didn't exist after the war, and certainly they still do today in many quarters. But really, it's at that local level, I think, that these attitudes start to break down.
Mm.
And restaurants, Chinese or whatever, are central to that.
Oh, no doubt,
and food.
That's Dr. Barbara Nicol, who's just completed her PhD, incidentally, on Chinese restaurants in Melbourne under the White Australia policy. God, you've got to love some PhD topics. Our correspondent for Histrionics this week. If you weren't hungry before, I'm sure you are now.